Ready to soundtrack your summer? With Red Bull Summer All Day Play, you choose a playlist that fits your summer vibe the best. Are you a festival fanatic, a deep end DJ, a road dog, or a trail mixer? Just add a song to your chosen playlist and put your summer on track. Red Bull Summer All Day Play. Red Bull gives you wings. Visit redbull.com/brightsummerahead to learn more. See you this summer.
When you need to build up your team to handle the growing chaos at work, use Indeed Sponsored Jobs. It gives your job post the boost it needs to be seen and helps reach people with the right skills, certifications, and more. Spend less time searching and more time actually interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Need a hiring hero? This is a job for Indeed Sponsored Jobs.
This is Climate One. I'm Ariana Brocious. In last week's episode, we featured an interview with Nathaniel Stinnett, founder and executive director of the Environmental Voter Project. The organization has a new survey that sheds some light onto why many people think of climate solutions as individual actions and not push for systemic change. For our pod audience, we're dropping this extended version of Austin Colon's conversation with Nathaniel Stinnett. They also cover how the redistricting race is changing the outlook for the midterm elections and what the new survey means for climate-conscious voters.
Your latest survey shows that Americans think about climate change more than abortion, immigration, or gun violence. Those are all issues that drive people to vote, and yet less than one-fifth of people see political solutions to reining in climate pollution. I just wonder why they don't view climate as a political issue.
Yeah, it's first of all, I can hear the frustration in your question, and I'm frustrated too, Austin. Believe me, like what is going on here, for God's sake? Well, I think it's pretty clear that a lot of it has to do with a very sophisticated and long-running PR campaign from the fossil fuel industry. Americans have been taught for generations to blame ourselves for the climate crisis. Mm-hmm. We've been taught to view climate change as a suicide instead of a homicide. And when you think that your own personal behavior is to blame, well, of course, the solutions that are going to come to mind for you are personal behavioral solutions. You're going to think, okay, I and people like me cause this problem. So I need to change what I eat. I need to change how I get to work. I need to change the electricity I consume, all of which is great and important. But dear God, the global climate crisis is about as systemic and political a problem as you could imagine. And the truth is, we can't change our consumer habits or recycle our way out of the climate crisis. It needs political solutions. And we need to overcome this fossil fuel propaganda that's convinced us otherwise.
Right. And like, you know, the best messaging is often rooted in some truth. And there is truth to that statement that we have, you know, individual choices we can make that can make a difference. But of course, they pale in comparison to the systemic levers that need to be pulled to solve this problem. And you say that if the climate movement doesn't get political real fast, we're going to keep losing. So what do you mean by getting political? What should that look like in practice?
Well, I'm glad you asked, because I think there is a big difference between being political and being partisan. What I'm not suggesting is that everybody needs to choose sides. It's fine if you want to choose a side, but that's not what I'm suggesting here. What I'm saying is that partisanship means less than ever, at least when it comes to policymaking. Because right now we live in a world where nothing trumps political power.
That was a nice pun that you slid in there, by the way.
Yes, I'm glad you noticed that, Austin. Yeah. And let me give you an example. You know, it wasn't that long ago that Republicans were pushing an immigration bill that they then did a complete about face on as soon as Donald Trump said, hey, I want you to vote against this because it will be good for me politically. That's an example of political power trumping sort of partisan policy priorities. But Democrats are guilty of it too. I mean, yes, Democrats tend to be more climate friendly, but they're not running for office to get their angel's wings. No, right. They're going to spend all their political capital on stuff that helps them maintain power. And so it all comes down to political power. And we in the climate movement need to do everything we can to get climate-concerned Americans to understand that nobody, not Democrats or Republicans, are going to lead on climate in a consistent way until they are forced to do so out of political necessity.
Okay, so let's go there. So in the survey, a lot of people responded that instead of pulling political levers, they would, you know, rather recycle. And so how do you shift someone from thinking, I should recycle more, to I need to vote for climate policies at the ballot box?
Yeah. So first, we need to make sure that they understand the climate crisis isn't their own personal fault.
Right. Right.
Right. This isn't a suicide. It's a homicide. You didn't do this to yourself. And so rather than focusing inward, start focusing outward on changing society. And that's obviously an inherently political gesture. To face outward. And so that's the first thing that we need to do in all of our messaging. I like to think of this as a storyteller, right? So human beings are a storytelling species. And we have basic archetypes of stories, mm-hmm. right? There is Icarus, a story of hubris, right? Someone getting too big for their britches and doing too much and getting too close to the sun. Well, that's kind of like the climate crisis story we've all been telling ourselves. Like, oh, humanity just did too much and we were so selfish and we're going to end up killing the planet. Does that sound familiar?
Yeah, it does.
We need a different story archetype. We need the hero slaying the dragon or the protagonist overcoming the antagonist because we didn't do this to ourselves. There's no hubris here.
Right.
And so we will get people to become more political when we teach them that someone is making this climate crisis happen and it isn't you. And if we grab political power and we start thinking about the ballot box instead of the compost bin, well, we can start making some real change.
Mm-hmm. And as we look to move this from messaging and conversations into real world action, are there examples of other issues that have successfully made this transition from personal to political?
I don't know if there are examples of issues making the transition. But I do think it's important to highlight how weird and unique this apolitical view of climate change is. And so when you look at this survey that we just did, by an almost 4-to-1 margin, U.S. adults proposed non-political solutions to the climate crisis over political solutions.
Mm-hmm.
But when we look at every other issue we tested, Austin, every single one, abortion, immigration, education, all of the top of mind solutions that people offered for those were the opposite. They offered political solutions by a 4-to-1 margin. And for gun violence, they offered political solutions by a 20-to-1 margin.
Wow.
So I can't give you an example of an issue that's made this transition from being seen as sort of a personal behavioral problem to a political problem. But I can tell you, Austin, that it is really weird and unique that Americans view climate change as being inside the four walls of their own house rather than a societal problem or a global problem.
So let's talk a little bit about the current political process, because I think this is going to affect how amplified certain communities' voices are, given that the president has asked Texas to gerrymander their maps in a highly partisan way to create more Republican seats for the upcoming midterm elections. And of course, once there's that push, then California's governor responded by proposing his own partisan redistricting plan. So can you give me a sense of just how rare this move is?
It's extraordinarily rare. Now, don't get me wrong. There have been isolated instances of states redrawing their districts, not every 10 years, but more often than that. Mm-hmm. But I can't think of another moment in time where there's been this national tit for tat in redrawing districts, nor can I think of a time when it's been done for such clearly partisan purposes. And right. Part of that is because it's only fairly recently that the Supreme Court has said, you know what, we've changed our mind. It's now totally okay for you to draw boundaries in purely partisan ways. And so, yeah, this is very unique.
And where do you see this heading?
I think that the upcoming midterms, and who knows, maybe 2 years after that and 2 years after that, but the next few sets of national congressional battles are going to more obviously be about getting political power.
Mm.
And maybe that sounds banal to you, to your listeners, but this is what I mean by that. We're used to talking about these congressional races in the context of particular issues. You know, is this going to be a healthcare election? Or is this going to be a COVID election or a this election or a that election? It's so clear now that this is about Democrats and Republicans jockeying for political power. And in a weird way, I think that in and of itself, that political gamesmanship itself is going to be a more prominent part of the election cycle. And I don't know if that's a good or a bad thing, because it's always been there. It's just that we haven't admitted it to ourselves. We've pretended often that like these elections are about something else, but now it's going to be in the forefront of every discussion.
And so for this current redistricting battle, how much do you think it's going to shift the outcomes of the upcoming midterm elections?
I think that no matter what states on the Democratic side are able to do, Republicans can do a little bit more. It's just the way the state constitutions are drafted and the way states are already gerrymandered, and the fact that most Democratic votes are geographically concentrated in cities. So it's a little bit harder to spread them out into lots of different districts.
Right.
And so probably at the end of coming out of this round of gerrymandering, Republicans are going to gain 3, 4, 5 seats. Now, does that mean they're going to gain 3, 4, 5 seats in the House of Representatives? No, because Republicans might pick up 3, 4, 5 seats in the face of a huge blue tidal wave where Democrats pick up 20 or 30 seats. That's not unheard of at the first midterm election after a president's second term, which essentially this is. That's not unheard of. And so I think Democrats absolutely still have a chance to win the House and, yes, even the Senate. But Republicans are going to make it harder with this round of redistricting. There's no doubt about that.
Right. And of course, then every cycle after that, I mean, so often the House is decided by 3, 4, 5 seats. And so this is going to affect the calculus again, and we're going to see these razor sharp margins more often. Speaking of Texas and California, they are also both states on the front line of climate impacts. And I wonder what this push to change congressional districts means for climate voters.
I think it means different things in Texas than it does in California. In Texas, because of how unique their grid is, their electric grid is, and how many, you know, how price shocks happen in the middle of winter storms and also in heat waves in the summer and things like that, climate is almost a year-round political issue in Texas, unlike in any other place. And so I actually see climate change maintaining its relevance regardless of what districts look like in Texas, just because the next disaster is always right around the corner in Texas. Now, that's not to say that it isn't in California. It's just a bit more seasonal. It's a bit more seasonal in California. As far as what the redistricting will mean in California, certainly, Democrats are going to come out with more federal political power in California, but it's not clear to me that this is going to impact state and local climate policymaking, because at least in California, the way things look, none of the state legislative districts are going to change. So when it comes to gubernatorial power and state legislative power and local power in California, nothing is changing. Nothing is changing. And so regardless of what's going on in Washington, D.C., what's going on in California isn't going to change based on these redistricting changes.
Gotcha. Nathaniel Stinnett is founder and executive director of the Environmental Voter Project. Nathaniel, thanks for joining us on Climate One.
Thank you, Austin. It's always a pleasure.
Climate One is a production of the Commonwealth Club. Our team includes Greg Dalton, Brad Marshland, Jenny Park, Austin Colon, Kushan Avidar, and Megan Basilia. Our theme music is by George Young. I'm Ariana Brocious.
You can't reason with the sun. Trust us, we've tried. This summer, it's time to put that angry ball of fire on mute. Columbia's OmniShade technology is engineered to protect you from the sun's harsh rays that can burn and damage your skin. The sun is relentless, but so is our gear. Level up your summer at Columbia.com to spend more time outside and less time slathering on aloe lotion. You're welcome. Columbia, engineered for whatever.